This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF College Podcast as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories. Every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy Slant, powered by Pro Football Focus. I'm your usual host, Michael Moore, along with our usual co-hosts, Scott Barrett and Mike Tagliere. We are here to review all of Week 6 action. It seemed like kind of a weird week this week, right? Like, upside down was downside up, and left was right, and it was just a weird week, right, Mike?
A lot of the studs decided to go off like in the spots they should have. Like, so I guess you could say a lot of the chalk did go off. One neat little stat I found, which is, it's really quite odd. I double checked it. So there were two quarterbacks that threw for over 400 yards today. And then last week there were two quarterbacks that threw for 400 yards. And I was like, when's the last time that happened? Back-to-back weeks, two 400 yard passers. And it was actually Week 5 and Week 6 of last year. Like the exact weeks. So 2017, Week 5 and Week 6, pay up for quarterbacks.
Apparently, that'll be in our next draft guide, Week 5 and Week 6. and then, Scott, you found a fun stat about Jay Ajayi, who we'll get to in a little bit. But what was the stat you found that proved just how weird this week was?
Yeah, so Jay Ajayi ran for over 200 yards, and he was actually PFF's worst graded running back this week. Right. Granted, a lot of it was due to his work as receiver and penalties, but I thought that was super interesting. Yeah, I mean, some of the chalk did go off. Odell Beckham against Sharice Wright, LeSean McCoy, me and Mike talked about earlier this morning, guaranteeing a big day for him. And then a ton of guys who we thought, you know, might have been on like the fringe of like dropping from your roster. Golden Tate went off. Jay Ajayi and Arian Foster were supposed to come back and dominate this week. Kendall Wright went off. So it was definitely an interesting week for sure.
All right. So let's break it down game by game as we usually do. First up, we've got the Patriots and the Bengals. Angry Tom Brady does it again. They win 35-17. He throws for 376 and three more touchdowns. That's 782 yards in two games, along with six touchdowns. Mike, let's start with you. I mean, I don't think it's crazy to say Tom Brady might be the top quarterback the rest of the way, right?
No, it's definitely not crazy, especially what New England's defense is allowing to slot receivers. It's really odd how bad Logan Ryan has kind of gotten this year, because last year he was a decent cornerback, but offenses are able to move the ball on the Patriots, which helps Tom Brady. You kind of saw it this week. They take away the number one option, but it's still because Brady started out this game actually relatively slow. He picked up as the game went on. But the real question for me that comes out of this game, I know we talked about it last week, and I continue to say that James White is underrated in the passing game. Like, he's the only running back this week that caught more than 5 passes. He caught 8 of them. And what he does after the catch is what's special. Like, obviously Tom Brady can dump it off to anybody, but James White after the catch, the guy's a monster. He did it last year, and a lot of people said it was touchdown dependent, and that just wasn't true. But I'm really like interested to see what happens once Deion Lewis returns to practice, if they kind of ease him in, take like the route of Jamal Charles, or if they, you know, say James White, it's to the bench you go. I don't know. I just don't think you could bench James White with how well he's playing right now.
Yeah, Scott, do you agree with that? I mean, White, you know, literally led the team in targets or tied with Gronkowski this week. I mean, it's very hard to, you know, not start this guy every week, especially in PPR leagues.
Yeah, as the guy who owns James White's Pro Football Reference page or sponsors it.
Oh, God, we have a celebrity here.
yeah, I've been a big White truther for a little over a year now. He's definitely going to be game script dependent. You know, games you expect Tom Brady to throw a ton or possibly it being a close game, that's a James White game. Games you think the Patriots are just going to blow out the opposition, that's more of a LeGarrette Blount game. But yeah, I mean, until Deion Lewis comes back, he definitely has some value. And I might argue that he's actually hurting Julian Edelman's value. Edelman only had 7 targets this week. He had another down performance last week. He could go off next week. Maybe Brady tries to make things right. But if not, I'd be a little concerned.
Well, and that's a good point. You think it's more of White's role there and maybe not Martellus Bennett taking some of those targets away from Edelman? Because, I mean, you're right. He's had a couple down weeks since, you know, Brady and the offense has sort of been 100%.
So I think Bennett could be playing a factor in Edelman's slow start. I actually was asking a question to Michael, the other Michael, about slot tight ends and slot receivers. If putting a tight end out at slot, does that hurt the slot receiver? You know, Julian Edelman runs the majority of his routes from the slot. You saw that this week with Kendall Wright, who's Tennessee's slot receiver, and Delanie Walker, who last season ran more routes out of the slot than any other tight end. And I'm really not sure. Mike, do you know if that's something that might be a concern for us?
No, I know we were talking about that, like, right before we hopped in, like, about Kendall Wright and how he'll affect Delanie Walker's productivity going forward. And it's definitely something that I'd actually like to research. That's very interesting, because you saw Delanie Walker in a chalk matchup. Like, Delanie Walker should have blown up today, and he ended up the game, I think it was one catch, wasn't it? So yeah, definitely you have to look at that to see if slot receivers, the more they're targeted, the less, I would imagine, yeah, because they operate in the same portion of the field. You know, like Cole Beasley, the way that Cole Beasley has kind of ascended, you've seen Jason Witten kind of descend. So I would assume that they do have negative correlation on each other. So it's definitely something to worry about. Although Danny Amendola, I mean, I want to look at the slot, like the snaps that they're doing, because Chris Hogan is an every snap player. Like, and a lot of people were asking me if they should play him this week. And I said, no, I didn't like the matchup with Jones and Kirkpatrick on the outside, but I figured Edelman would be able to do damage inside. He didn't. But yeah, it's definitely something to pay attention to going forward, but it's almost like the Saints, where it's going to be difficult to pick one player every single week, except for Gronk. You just throw Gronk in your lineup every single week.
Well, yeah, because if you think about it, I mean, Bennett was the one player or one position that wasn't there last year in New England. I mean, you still had the pass catching back last year, and Edelman coexisted with that. Yeah. Bennett's sort of the new guy in town, and you know, that could be the reason. But yeah, all right. So on the other side of the ball with the Bengals, another subpar offensive performance. The running game, again, failed to get anything going. Scott, I think – what did I calculate it at? I think between Gio Bernard and Jeremy Hill, between the two of them, they had 28 carries for 87 yards. They're running for less than 3.5 yards per attempt for the season. I mean, is it time to jump ship on these two? I mean, they're not safe starts every week anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, last season it was a committee backfield, but there was enough fantasy production to really sustain both of their values. I think their decline might have something to do with Hugh Jackson's departure. Mm. So his last four seasons as an offensive coordinator or head coach, his offense is ranked top 7 in rushing attempts and rushing touchdowns. And heading into the week, the Browns ranked 5th in rushing yardage, and the Bengals ranked 26th in yardage, rushing yardage. So I don't know, maybe it's due to the coaching change, but really, these are two guys I'm not too excited about. This should have been a great game for Gio. He didn't really do much for your fantasy team, and Hill might be dealing with an injury as well. Just definitely two guys I'm not too excited about going forward.
More, I think part of the problem too is that their start to the schedule. So they played the Jets week one, the Steelers with Shazier in week two. They had Denver in week three, Miami, who slowed down, you know, Le'Veon Bell today. Dallas and New England. So their schedule has been pretty tough to start the year too. So that's probably part to attribute, but yeah, I agree with Scott though, that Hugh Jackson definitely has a positive impact on any running game. So that's definitely a loss for them as an offense.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to, that backwards game we were talking about. The Dolphins, somehow beat the Steelers 30-15. As Scott alluded to before, you had Jay Ajayi, who, PFF rating be damned, had 204 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. It was kind of interesting, Scott, because, you know, a lot of the news reports were indicating, oh, Foster's coming back. You know, he might resume his role as sort of the lead back there. But, I mean, that just didn't happen. I mean, Ajayi was the clear-cut bell cow in this game.
Yeah, so it's super interesting. Over the past 3 weeks, Ajayi had – or 4 weeks, he had 9, 7, 8, and 13 touches. So, of course, the week that Foster comes back and everyone gets off of him, they use him as a workhorse.
Yeah, it was interesting. I don't know, Mike, is this something that, you know, rest of season that we should expect? I mean, at the very least, Ajayi's, I think, earned himself some more playing time, right?
Absolutely. It's going to turn more into a timeshare between him and Foster. I think this was like more of like Foster getting him like reacclimated to the game, because as you've seen, like, Adam Gase doesn't just like give somebody the lion's share of carries. And I think it's going to be a frustrating backfield to take part in. And honestly, if you own Jay Ajayi, congratulations, sell him high now, do it, because you even saw as the game went on, Damian Williams was playing a bigger part than I think any of us would have imagined, even though Jay Ajayi was playing semi-decent. But Arian Foster is going to take a lot of the work in the passing game. And to be honest with you, let's not pretend that the Dolphins have positive game script very often. So, you know, the fact that they were leading for a majority of this game has a lot to do with Jay Ajayi's success. Just going forward, don't anticipate that. So, like I said, if you have Jay Ajayi, if you get him off waivers, trade him immediately.
Yeah, so on the other side of the ball, I think a lot of us were expecting bigger games from everybody, quite honestly, on the Steelers. Let's start with Le'Veon Bell, 10 carries for 53 yards. So still extremely efficient running the ball, and then 6 catches for 55 yards. Scott, they only ran the Steelers 16 times the entire game, but it was a pretty close game for most of the time. So what gives on this?
Yeah, so I think this proves that Le'Veon Bell is game script proof. Like, yes, he got game scripted out of carries, but he led the team in receiving. This was just a really weird day. And I think it goes back to Ben Roethlisberger's really crazy home and away splits. Yeah, he's just not someone you could trust away. We saw this last year in like a dream matchup against, I think it was the Ravens, and he had like 125 yards at the end of the game. And he really just stunk when he should have blown apart the Dolphins, as everyone else has been doing. I'm not sure what to make of it. I think just going forward, you can't really trust Ben away. I think Le'Veon Bell is fairly matchup proof. He did have an injury too, but I don't think he missed too much time with that.
Roethlisberger, yeah, he's having an MRI on his knee afterwards is what I heard.
Yeah, but yeah, he finished with 189, one touchdown, two interceptions. Yeah, it was, and it had an effect. I mean, look, on the receiving game, like you mentioned, Scott, Le'Veon Bell ended up leading the team in receiving, where Antonio Brown had 4 for 39. Sammy Coates, who a lot of people thought might repeat what he did last week, had 0 for 0 on 4 targets. So, yeah, it was just a weird game. But, yeah, I mean, I know you've mentioned it before, Mike, that whole home and away thing for the Steelers, you know, it's a real thing. I mean, I think that's something you got to take into consideration. Save for Le'Veon Bell, as Scott said. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, you just start him every week and don't look back.
Well, guys, I'm gonna chime in something here real quick, just because nobody knows this stuff. Ben Roethlisberger is. I told people before the season that you didn't want to rely on him as a QB1. I understand you're gonna draft him there, but you're not. There's like only a certain amount of quarterbacks that you want to rely on as an every week starter. Ben Roethlisberger was not that. Over the last 5 years, Ben Roethlisberger has busted. And when I say bust, I consider it less than 14 fantasy points. He's busted in 39% of his games. That is more than Jay Cutler. To give you an idea as to how much Ben Roethlisberger like busts in fantasy, Jay Cutler, he does more than Alex Smith is like tied with him for bust rate over this, the last 5 years. So the loss of Martavis Bryant was huge. Obviously this week there was more of an effect too. Sammy Coates only played 17 snaps in the game. So he was more of like a decoy. He was never meant to do anything in this game, but it just goes to show, don't ever trust Ben Roethlisberger on the road. Unless like literally unless everything is going well with the offense, he has everybody back. I just don't know. He's just not someone you want to trust in, week out.
I feel like that needs to be on like your gravestone, Mike. Like that's the one piece of advice that people take from you is don't start Ben Roethlisberger on the road. Yeah. I don't know if you want it to be that, but I think it'll stick. So
yeah, maybe.
All right. So, one more note on this Dolphins game that I did want to mention. So Jarvis Landry, kind of a bounce back game, only 3 targets last week, 9 again this week. He's had 9 targets every game this year except for 1. So, Scott, I think Jarvis Landry also is borderline matchup proof, at least if you're in a PPR league and, you know, you're not expecting him to be a wide receiver one every week.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Okay, so next game. The Lions win a squeaker against the Rams, 31-28. Needless to say, I think the big surprise here was Golden Tate, who I don't know if a lot of people saw it coming, but hey, it happened. 8 for 165 and a touchdown. What I found interesting, Scott, he only had one more target than Anquan Boldin. Did have 4 more than Marvin Jones. So you know, is this a fluke this week? Do they just want to sort of shut all the Golden Tate doubters up? Or, you know, is this a trend or is this matchup proof or what is it?
So it was a fluke and it also wasn't a fluke. It was a fluke in the sense that this was the most receiving yardage Golden Tate has ever had in his career, and he's done nothing else throughout the entire season, in spite of the offensive coordinator saying he was going to feed him heavily last week. But it wasn't a fluke in the sense that, you know, some people did see this coming. It made sense with Theo Riddick out, with Eric Ebron out. So I want to say yes and no to that. Also, I pulled up Ben Roethlisberger's home and away splits since 2014. He has 17 home games where he averaged 30.5 fantasy points per game. In 16 away games over that stretch, he averages 17.9 fantasy points per game.
There you go. Like 50% drop off.
Yeah, he's not very good. But Scott, I don't know if you remember this morning on our FanVice show, I actually mentioned that I actually think that starting Marvin Jones and Golden Tate inside of a lineup would be like, I actually think it was a viable strategy because like the Rams were missing. Like, and when you say fluke and stuff, yeah, I mean, the reason you could have seen it, Trumaine Johnson was out for the Rams. That's their best cornerback, and he covers the outside. So Golden Tate is not playing in the slot this year. He's playing pretty much outside for the majority of his snaps. So he was going to be matched up with, you know, EJ Gaines and Troy Hill, who are very bad. So that's why I kind of liked Golden Tate this week. But he graded out negatively, slightly negatively, with PFF this week. Because
of course. This week, of course.
Well, yeah, of the 10 targets that he got, he caught 8 of them, but the other 2 he dropped. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to say Golden Tate is like the Golden Tate revival, but I think a part of it had to do with the defense he was playing, and I think part of it had to do with the fact that Theo Riddick was out and some of those targets funneled into the wide receivers.
Mike, are you worried about Marvin Jones at all? The first 2 weeks he had 21 targets, and then since then he's had 8, 7, 5, and 6.
I was so disappointed. I said that Marvin Jones should have went nuclear today. And that was the word I used because like he should have had the game that Golden Tate did. It started out fantastic. He caught a touchdown in, like the first 5 minutes and it was like, yep, we're on our way there. Like it was supposed to be. And then he just really wasn't targeted. I don't know what the idea behind that was. I don't know why Anquan Boldin is seeing more targets than him. It's quite ridiculous in my opinion. But I mean, it's working for them. So, I mean, I guess it has to, I think we just have to bring back our expectations a little bit and say, okay, maybe he's more of like that wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 that we thought he was when we drafted.
Yeah. Speaking of receivers in this game, who I did want to mention for the Rams, Kenny Britt, did go off 7 for 136 and 2 touchdowns. He does have 75 yards in 4 of their, 5 games this year. So, Mike, do we have to take Kenny Britt for real? Like, seriously?
Case Keenum for life, baby.
Let's not get crazy, Mike.
Keenum has actually played really well lately, so I can't even give him any crap. But, no, Kenny Britt, apparently we have to take him seriously. A lot of teams have kind of sold out to stop the run with the Rams, and Kenny Britt is dominating one-on-one coverage. And, you know, this week he made some fantastic plays. It wasn't even just like a one – because a lot of times Kenny Britt, he'll have one big catch for a touchdown. You're like, okay, that kind of made his stat sheet. But he caught 7 balls today, 2 of them for touchdowns, 1 of them he fought for. I think Kenny Britt, you have to look at him as a legitimate option, especially considering this Rams defense is pathetic. They're not doing anything on the defense. Like, they're not stopping anybody. So the game script's always going to be in his favor. Todd Gurley doesn't seem to be able to average more than 4 yards per carry against any team. So, yeah, I guess you have to take him seriously. I don't know if I'd put him in my top 35 receivers or anything like that, but if you're on a wide receiver needy team, sure.
Well, yeah, I think the Tavon Austin experiment has officially ended. Coming into the week, he had the 12th most targets at the position. He was in a dream matchup against Quandre Diggs in the slot, and he only had 4 targets, getting out-targeted by Britt with 8, Kendricks with 8, and Brian Quick with 5. So I think he's fairly droppable. Also, I wanted to add back on the Lions that Matt Stafford is now fantasy's top highest-scoring quarterback.
Is he really into that? It hasn't added in Matt Ryan's game, I'm guessing, but
no, I think it did. I think he just I don't know. Maybe either way,
Stafford's had a pretty good
ahead. He's either 1 or 2, yeah. 1 or 2.
That's nuts. That's really nuts. The
season after Calvin Johnson retired.
Yeah, that's That is crazy. And I actually came across a stat before right before we got on, and it's Matthew Stafford. He's thrown, and it was like 150 of his yards the last 2 weeks have come actually by throwing the ball. The other like 300 have been after the catch. It's kind of some crazy stat like that.
Jim Bob Cooter, baby.
Yeah.
That see, now that's a life I could get behind, the Cooter life.
That 4.7 yards per attempt.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's move on to Jaguars and Bears. The Jaguars win on sort of the last minute, 17-16. We'll get to the Bears in a minute. I mean, they had a pretty good game through the air. But, Scott, let's talk about Allen Robinson. Another not great game, only 21 catches for 238 yards and three touchdowns through five games so far this year. I mean, what is the deal there? Is it just the passing game in Jacksonville in general, or is it Robinson, or what?
Yeah, so this one bothers me. This one hurts. I was excited about Allen Robinson.
You sound disappointed by this. I know.
I was excited about Robinson this week. So Blake Bortles has just been terrible, and he's hurting the fantasy value of Hearns and Robinson. I don't think they're going to come anywhere close to what they did last season. I do think they're still both viable. I'm hoping Robinson is still in that mid to high range wide receiver two range, and Hearns is maybe low end wide receiver three. Really annoyed that Hearns pretty much doubled Robinson in targets. But Robinson, I think going forward, is going to be one of those highly volatile and matchup dependent wide receivers. So something I looked at last season, at the end of last season, was Allen Robinson averaged 0.68 fantasy points per target against our top 20 graded cornerbacks. And he averaged 3.1 fantasy points per target against our bottom 25 cornerbacks. And that was far and away the largest disparity of any wide receiver I looked at. And then if you look this season, prior to this week, 53% of his fantasy points came against Sharice Wright and Antonio Cromartie on only 9 targets. Want to guess where they rank? Bottom 25.
That's interesting, though. I mean, that's a fairly clear-cut indication of Allen Robinson that, hey, he may struggle against top corners, but against those bottom corners, he could tear it up pretty good. So, all right, on the Bears side, we had Brian Hoyer, another 300-yard game. That's getting boring, I guess, by this point. But let's talk about Cameron Meredith, another big game. He almost matches Allen Robinson's stat line, 20 catches for 243 and one touchdown over the last 2 weeks, where Robinson has 5 games. So, Mike, I guess this is another guy we got to take seriously. It's essentially what Kevin White should have been.
It's kind of like the opposite of what's going on with the Jaguars. So, touching on the Jags real quick before we move on, the reason that they're lacking the production a little bit is because Blake Bortles he's only reached for more than 38 attempts in one game this year. So like his attempts are down. The problem is that their defense is getting better by the week. Jalen Ramsey looks like legit. Like he's going to be good. Like he's going to get eaten up by some number one receivers, but he's going to be good. But with their defense getting slightly better every single week, it's going to bring down his attempts. And Blake Bortles was relying on nothing but attempts last year. And Allen Robinson's going to need those attempts. So Scott, you were saying, you know, in matchups where the opponent's going to put up a lot of points on them, where you have confidence in that, that's when you could feel confident about playing Allen Robinson, because you know the volume is going to be there. But as for the Bears, it's the opposite. You know, last year you saw the Jaguars see those attempts nonstop every single game. That's the Bears this year, especially under Brian Hoyer. They're throwing the ball a ton. Brian Hoyer's 300-yard game. I didn't expect him to do very, very well against Jacksonville, because as I said, Jacksonville has been getting better slightly by the week. But it was reassuring to see both Meredith and Alshon Jeffrey be able to be fantasy relevant in this game. Meredith, I wasn't buying after just one game, but seeing him being used in this game, I think he saw 15 targets, which is just ridiculous. I going forward, you have to assume that he's a legitimate wide receiver three, startable in fantasy.
Only Odell Beckham Jr. has more fantasy points at the wide receiver position than Meredith does over the past 2 weeks.
Yeah. No, he's like I said, today summed it up. They used him all over. It wasn't just deep or anything like that. They used him in short crossing routes, everything. So he's being used all over the field.
One more note on this game, guys. The running game for Chicago, kind of weird. So Jordan Howard, after a very big week last week, I mean, he was a true workhorse. He had 15 carries this week, where Kadeem Carey had 9. Scott, does this sort of bring back, you know, Jordan Howard truthers down to earth? I mean, you know, we all hoped that John Fox had sort of, you know, turned a corner and was ready to give the keys to one guy, but it seems like he may be having doubts about that now.
Yeah, I really don't know what happened here. Definitely a disappointment for all of my Jordan Howard MFL 10 shares. I mean, the running game, he was killing it as that bell cow. I really don't know why he'd move away from it, but I suspect, yeah, now that Carey is back and healthy, he's going to eat into Howard's touches. Mike, am I missing anything? Was there an injury to Howard or anything like that?
No, they want to use Carey more than most people want them to. And now that he's back healthy on the field, I mean, that's why even Jeremy Langford, when he comes back, I still think this is Howard's backfield. I do. He looked a little sluggish today. He didn't look as spry to me. But like I said, like, I think people are underestimating the Jaguars defense a little bit. They've looked better. They had a lot of moving parts come there this offseason and through the draft and through injuries coming back that I felt like Jacksonville would take time to gel, and it's kind of showing in their defense. So I won't worry too much about one game. If it becomes a trend, yeah. But I think Kadeem Carey, it was just more they had a lot of time of possession in this game, the Bears did. And Kadeem Carey is their preferred passing down back, so that's why he was out there a little bit more than I guess we would have liked.
Well, and I got a chance to watch most of this game, and Howard just wasn't very effective early on, and I feel like Fox probably thought, nope, like, not going to roll with that much longer, and put Carey out there. And he actually ran the ball pretty well. I mean, he had a couple of carries for 5 or 6 yards, and, you know, I think that's just Fox's thinking, like, hey, it's going to be a hot hand kind of thing. And, look, Jordan Howard's not going to be able to reel off 40-yard runs every single carry, unfortunately. Right. So there's going to be times when he, you know, is stuffed at the line and gets 1 yard of carry, and, you know, people just have to live with it. So, all right, one more game, and then we'll take a quick break. Let's go to the shootout. Saints 41, Panthers 38. Drew Brees, another fantastic game at home. 70% of his passes completed, 465 for 4 touchdowns. Kobe Fleener, finally, well, I shouldn't say finally, he had one other good game. 7 for 74 and 1 touchdown receiving, plus 1 touchdown rushing. Scott, we all saw the rushing touchdown coming, right? Like, we all called.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I feel like the Breeze-Fleener connection is kind of home away dependent too, right? Because Fleener's only good games this year came at home. I mean, he hasn't done well on the road at all in their 3 games on the road.
I don't know if it's Fleener. I just think it's Breeze. Breeze is like Ben in that sense where he's much better at home than he is away. I can pull up the stats right now, actually.
Except Breeze is actually startable on the road sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, look, they do get into shootouts sometimes, and he can bring him back if he
has
to.
No, what is it? The Saints have like 5 rushing touchdowns on the year, and Mark Ingram has 1.
Kuhn and Fleener have 4 of them between them. So. But yeah, I mean, look, it was, and the interesting part was the Saints went out to a very big lead. The Panthers, to their credit, came back. I mean, they made a game of this, but it was just the Drew Brees show again. So,
So since 2013, Drew Brees averages 31.1 fantasy points per game at home and 21.4 fantasy points per game away. That's a huge disparity.
Yeah. And then additionally, I mean, Kobe Fleener wasn't the only Saints receiver to have a good game. Michael Thomas, 5 for 78 and a touchdown. And of course, Brandon Cooks with that 87-yard bomb, 7 for 173 and a touchdown. Yeah, I don't think there's much analysis here. Like, the Saints passing offense is pretty good at home. Like, end of story.
Yeah, Drew Brees was when you're throwing out 3 backup cornerbacks against Drew Brees, you're going to pay for it, and they did. They weren't even getting much of a pass rush on him. But there was that one dirty play, man. He got punched. He literally got punched in the mouth. Like, one of the defensive linemen in Carolina, I didn't catch him who it was, but he punched Drew Brees in the mouth. He was like bleeding. He got flagged for it, but it was like the dirtiest play I've ever seen. It was ridiculous.
They had to throw him off somehow, Mike.
So, I don't think it worked. You know?
I mean, Carolina, to their credit, I know Jonathan Stewart was a popular play because the Saints did have the best defense for fantasy running backs going into this game. And honestly, he didn't disappoint. I mean, 85 yards and 2 rushing touchdowns coming back from injury. So, Scott, is Stewart more matchup dependent, you think? Or now that he's sort of, you know, the only viable option for the Panthers at running back, like, he's a must-start every week?
No, I wrote up Stewart this week for my Contrarian Plays article because exactly that. He was surprisingly low owned and he had the matchup. And I guess people were scared off of him because he was coming back from injury. He's more matchup dependent than most. He's not involved heavily in the receiving game. He only had one target today and Cam vultures touchdowns from his own running backs. I'm really only playing him when the matchup's really nice or the Panthers are expected to blow somebody out.
Yeah.
It will help, though, that the Panthers did say that they're actually going to dial it back with Cam on the goal line. So today may have been a sign of things to come. So, I mean, they did say that they want, after the concussion, that they want him to dial it back a little bit. So I don't know. That might be something.
Yeah, with their record, though, I'm not sure they have any choice in that matter.
I don't think they have that luxury right now.
Well, that, and I don't think they're going to be scoring 80 points between two teams every week that will allow them to run wild there. So. All right, well, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get to the rest of the Week 6 action.
This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF NFL podcast as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories. Every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
All right, everyone, welcome back. Next up, we've got the Giants, and Ravens, 27-23 to the Giants. Scott, you are our resident Giants expert. So I don't know that there's much analysis to go into this. Odell Beckham's pretty good.
Yeah, so he's really good, and a lot of people were scared and like getting off of him just because of how shaky and inconsistent he's been. But this is something I've argued since last season. He was like amazing for pretty much almost every single week. But I did argue that he should be perceived as more volatile than he was just based on how many big plays he was getting. He had five 50 yard plays last season, which was second most in the league, all went for touchdowns. He had eight plays of at least 40 yards. That was most in the league. He's not an elite red zone guy like Jordy Nelson is, and he's not an elite possession guy. So he's going to be more boom and bust than most, I think. And you're really relying on those deep passes that he takes to the house. But he got that today. All's good for Odell Beckham Jr. owners. Just know if he has another two down weeks, don't cut bait. Don't freak out.
All right. So on the other side of the ball, Mike, the Ravens. So Terrence West continues to produce 87 yards on the ground and two rushing touchdowns. Also did some damage in the air. I'm curious where you rank West rest of season. I mean, we know he's got Kenneth Dixon, you know, behind him on the depth chart. But I mean, West is producing. He's produced every week for the last couple weeks, despite two different offensive coordinators now.
Right. And that my concern is that they're riding the hot hand. As much as I want to say that Terrence West is an RB2 going forward, I do worry about if, like, you know, we were just talking about Jordan Howard and a John Fox situation where if he struggles for a week or two, that they just go away from him because they have other options. You know, most teams don't have that luxury of having two top tier backs. We don't even know if Kenneth Dixon is, but Terrence West, what he did today was pretty impressive. The Giants are actually a pretty decent run unit. Had been, I should say, but allowing two touchdowns to him. It's hard. Right now you have to consider him an every week RB2 until he has a down game. Then you're going to see like kind of the true colors. And if he has a down game, I'm interested to see what the Ravens do the next week. But right now, I don't think there's a way they could sit him, you know, with the way he's been playing.
And honestly, look, they cut Forsett. They don't activate Buck Allen most weeks. So he's truly like one of the only options in the backfield at this point. So,
yeah.
All right, moving on. Let's cover the Titans and the Browns. The Titans win 28-26. The big story here, Scott, Kendall Wright, he's back, he's healthy, etc. Goes off for, eight catches for 133 and a touchdown. And I know you and Mike were discussing this, that this sort of came at the expense of Delanie Walker. But, I mean, is this something that we should look forward to rest of the season? Not the 8 for 133 every week, but, you know, is he going to be, a flex play or wide receiver 3 play?
I don't know. They were talking about getting him more involved earlier in the week. I guess it happened. I do think he's the best wide receiver on the team. I don't know. Mike, what do you think?
Well, I'm being drawn back to the beginning of last year when Marcus Mariota was actually really, really good before he got hurt. I said last week, unfortunately, I didn't see almost any of this game today. I'm going to go back and watch it because in week five, they ran a lot more option with Mariota and he responded extremely well. That's just the type of quarterback he is. I was worried about his wide receivers, but Kendall Wright reemerging, you know, we know that the guy's talented. There's a reason he was drafted where he was at. So if he's healthy, that's good. Rishard Matthews has been playing better. Tajae Sharpe might be on the bench pretty soon. He's playing the most snaps, but he's not doing anything with him. Mariota, he actually in the last 2 weeks, he's averaged 0.90 or more fantasy points per dropback. There is no other quarterback that's had two straight weeks like that, like he has in the last two. There's only one quarterback who's had two games like that all season, and that's Matt Ryan, who is fantasy's number one or number two quarterback. So, yeah, with the way DeMarco Murray's running the ball, like you saw, basically Cleveland, we don't know if they sold out to stop DeMarco Murray but because their secondary is so bad. But it's something you have to take notice of Mariota. But he did have a cake matchup this week. So, but 3 weeks straight, you have my attention. Like if he gets it going, like I have to trust him going forward until he gives me a reason not to. But with the way they're running the offense, it is reassuring.
He only played on 35% of the snaps today, which is about his average for the season. He just had he just had nine targets when last week he had one.
Yeah, they were working him in the hamstring. I know that. I think it might have been like easing him in with the hamstring because he didn't, like Scott, if you remember, he was like almost no part of training camp. Like he didn't play in any preseason game and like they were frustrated with him. Like there was like a disconnect. So I think it might have been like working him back into the offense. And, you know, with the way he played this week, I don't see how they continue to trot, you know, Tajae Sharpe out there for every single snap and not get Kendall right in the field more.
He was PFF's highest graded wide receiver this week.
Yeah.
So you guys are saying Andre Johnson is not overtaking. That's what you're saying. So don't put away before then.
Revenge week next week. Actually, Mariota's a good start again next week, though, guys. He's playing against Indy.
There you go. I guess Andre Johnson's second revenge game. That's fine. All right. One more note, actually, on this game. Terrell Pryor, another solid performance. 9 for 75 and 2 touchdowns. I don't know, Scott. I mean, we can acknowledge he's good, but how good is Pryor? Is he safely in the wide receiver 2 conversation at this point?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
he's getting the volume. He looks great. He's doing well with it.
Well, and it's interesting because he literally needed to catch every single break to get this opportunity, if you think about it. I mean, you know, they had toyed with him at receiver last year. He didn't get a lot of opportunity there. This year you've got Josh Gordon who, you know, suspended himself indefinitely. You had the Corey Coleman injury. They literally had no one else to throw out there. And look, he's taking the job and running with it. I mean, good for him. He's I think, successfully made the conversion now.
Listen, I love Terrell Pryor. Like, he's a guy I loaded up on in Dynasty this offseason. And it's pretty much because he's a freak athlete. So Calvin Johnson, since 2000, has the highest, the best weight adjusted 40 time among all wide receivers to ever take place in the combine. Julio Jones is the fifth highest. Terrell Pryor has the third best weight adjusted 40 time. He has that athletic build. He's scary fast and he's running routes like an actual wide receiver. I'd be really excited to own him in Dynasty or even redraft.
So you heard it here first, folks. Scott Barrett is calling Terrell Pryor the next Calvin Johnson. It's on record now. So, all right, let's move on. Redskins over the Eagles, 27-20. You know, the Eagles didn't look great offensively, Mike. Ryan Matthews, he was the lead back, but it's not exactly a bell cow position.
It's something to run from, honestly. It's really scary to see Ryan Matthews' numbers. I was going through them before we got on today, and he played 11 snaps today, guys. 11. Like, if you play 20 snaps, it's scary as a running back. And I went through his percentages going back to week one, 48%, and then 29%, 12%, 41%, and then 21%. So he has literally never played half the snaps in a game. So, you know, I talked to some people on Twitter before the game started, and a lot of questions revolved around Ryan Matthews against this putrid Washington defense, who literally they've allowed so many points to the running back position. And I tended to try and shy away from Matthews because I just don't want to trust a running back who's on the field for 20 snaps a game. Teams are going to start catching on to what the Eagles are doing when he's on the field, because when he's on the field, he's touching the ball. As you see, 11 snaps. He touched the ball 9 times in this game. So you know what they're doing. It's pretty clear. I don't really get it. And it's kind of ridiculous, as a matter of fact, because Kenjon Barner, Wendell Smallwood, they're not on the talent level of Ryan Matthews. Matthews has done really well with the ball in his hand, but they're just not getting it to him enough. So if you find someone in your league willing to say that this was just a game script problem, sell Ryan Matthews, because these snaps are extremely worrisome.
Not just that, but 77% of his rushing yards have come after contact. Either his offensive line is not giving him any help, or he's just doing a bad job of kind of getting past that first, getting past the line of scrimmage.
So the running back on the other side, by comparison, had a good day. Matt Jones, another solid performance, 135 yards on just 16 carries and a touchdown. Scott, I mean, I think, you know, we got to start taking Matt Jones for real. I mean, he does. It's not completely bell cow. I mean, he did have to split carries with Kelly and Chris Thompson. But, I mean, he's been pretty effective for the limited time he's been in there.
Yeah, I mean – I guess.
You don't sound confident about that, Scott.
No. So the head coach earlier this week said Rob Kelly has earned the right for more touches, and he was just as good as Matt Jones, albeit on fewer touches. Went 5 for 59. Chris Thompson had nine carries, and Chris Thompson also had 3 targets, where Jones had 0. He's not someone I'm too excited about. It was a good game, but I'm still not taking him seriously yet.
Well, and to your point, Washington as a team averaged 7 yards a carry today against the Eagles. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think you may be right. It's not just Jones. They all had a good day there. So, all right, one more afternoon game. The Bills destroy the 49ers 45-16. We will talk about the Bills, but, Mike, let's just get it out of the way. Colin Kaepernick made his return, 187 yards through the air and a touchdown. Did add 66 yards on the ground. And this was against a fairly good defense against fantasy quarterbacks. So is there some hope here for Kaepernick rest of the season?
It was very Blaine Gabbert-ish.
the ultimate put down, Scott.
No, that's seriously the way to put it. Like, I'm serious. Like, doesn't it seem like this would have been the final score with Blaine Gabbert as the quarterback? Like, in like a similar stat line, to be honest. The way they got there maybe would probably be a little different. Blaine Gabbert would have probably hit Jeremy Curley like 20 times. But the thing that I take away from this game is it's a little bit of hope for Torrey Smith. It was really frustrating as someone that, like myself, and I'm not going to run from it. I was all over Torrey Smith before the season started, and I had my reasons, and I felt like I explained them well. But he just simply wasn't being targeted with Gabbert. Gabbert wasn't looking at him at all. At least we know that Kaepernick is willing to take some shots down the field. Torrey Smith saw 7 targets in this game. Like I said, it is very reassuring for his value. And on top of that, the San Francisco defense is who we thought they were. You know, after week one with the Rams, some people were like, oh, this 49ers defense. No, they're extremely bad. And losing Navarro Bowman, it's just made this defense even worse. So the only thing I take away from this game is that Kaepernick's going to keep the job. There's no way that they're going to flip-flop back and forth. But it helps Torrey Smith more than it hurts anything.
I kind of disagree with that. I can't help but ponder if there might not be another QB change before the end of the season.
Scott has been waiting. Scott's been waiting all night for that. I can tell. He was waiting all night.
The team wants Christian Ponder in there, man.
They do. Well, who knows? Who knows with that team, man? I mean, it's all political at this point.
This is Moore's team. Moore, what do you think?
I think Kaepernick gives them their best shot, but I hear the same report Scott did. It's like, you know, they're tired of the drama and they just want to move on from it. And look, I've said this all along, and I know you know I've said this, Mike. They're playing for the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. That's it. Like, they're not going to be good this year, period. So I don't think any of these quarterbacks on the 49ers are going to be the starting quarterback for them next season. It's just not going to happen.
I agree.
All right. On the other side of the ball, Scott, let's talk LeSean McCoy. Again, I don't know about if there's much analysis needed. he's really good. 19 carries, 140 yards, three touchdowns, did add two catches. I mean, he's pretty much matchup proof at this point the rest of the season. I mean, he's a top five option.
Yeah. So at the time of this podcast, he is our highest graded runner. He leads the league in rushing yards and rushing yards per carry. He's also the top fantasy running back. I mean, that could change depending on what David Johnson does. But he's definitely up there for me. He had a killer week this week. I mean, even Gillislee went off. He had six carries for 60 yards and a touchdown. But the main thing is LeSean McCoy is getting that bell cow role, something I talk about every week on this podcast, something I track. Bell cow games, it's 66% of the running back snaps, targets, and carries. And he's the only running back to have that every single week. I'll have to look and see if he did it this week. I suspect he did. And we should have known this game was coming against the San Francisco 49ers. You know, there was going to be a ton of positive game script. They run at such a high pace, and it has me really excited for Doug Martin next week without Sims.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, because Martin will be coming back from that injury, and they desperately need him to come back because they're dropping like flies there. All right, let's go to the afternoon games. Chiefs win over the Raiders 26-10. Mike, so I think the thing we wanted to see here was just how involved Jamaal Charles would be. He's still coming along from that injury. It was clear that he was not, you know, he's not the lead back, at least not yet. I mean, he had nine carries to Spencer Ware's 24. Ware had a great game, 131 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Yeah, and added two catches for 32 yards. So, you know, what do we make of this? Is this another situation that we have to avoid until there's some clarity there?
I legit got into an argument with Brandon on our Roto Grinders show on Thursday about this, saying that Spencer Ware, that she was saying that Jamaal Charles was going to be ridden, like that he gives them their best chance to win. And I said I didn't necessarily know if that was the case. I think Spencer Ware is a crazy good running back, and I stood by Spencer Ware, and I still said that he was an RB2, RB3 this week, and that worked out. Fortunately for her, Jamaal Charles scored. She can sit on that. But for me, I take away from this that the Chiefs know what they have in Spencer Ware. They're not going to put him on the bench. He's too good of a running back to just sit there and not play. That's kind of where I sit. I think it's a timeshare going forward. I'm not saying that eventually Jamaal Charles is not going to see, you know, 60 to 40, but Spencer Ware is going to be flex worthy at minimum every single week.
Yeah. And not to get too much of an exaggeration, but Spencer Ware for the season is averaging a very Jamaal Charles like 5 yards per carry so far. So I don't know what it is in the water there in Kansas City with their running backs, but they do a pretty good job. Great,
man. That guy can coach a running back.
Apparently. That's right. Yeah. So on the other side with the Raiders, you know, Scott, no one really had a good game except Amari Cooper. He went off again, 10 for 129, has had, you know, two very good weeks these last 2 weeks. So, and I know you, I thought I'd mentioned something about this more being matchup proof, that Crabtree definitely had the bigger challenge opposite him this week, right?
Against Marcus Peters. I don't know, because
Peters
didn't
got hurt.
Yeah, Peters got hurt. So okay. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what happened here. I think Crabtree is still relatively safe. I have a stat on that, but I have to pull it up first.
Okay. But the bottom line here is that Amari Cooper's the man. Like, Amari Cooper is so good. I love watching Amari Cooper play football. That's basically the bottom line. If you watch that guy run routes, you know that he's going to be really, really good for a really long time. And if you play in a dynasty league, I'm not sure there's a wide receiver I'd rather own.
Wow. Really? Hot take.
He's really that high on my list. Like Odell Beckham, yeah, I guess I'd probably still lean Beckham, but Amari Cooper is elite. And like with the age creeping up there with Julio, Antonio, Amari Cooper.
That's not crazy. I mean, he's definitely, I think, top five for a lot of people. So, but yeah, he just dominated targets today. He had 13. The next closest, Seth Roberts, was 6. So, yeah, he's definitely the man, though.
Yeah, so my Michael Crabtree stat is just that, like heading into this week, Antonio Brown and Crabtree both had 5 touchdowns this season, and they both have 13 touchdowns over their prior 16 games.
There you go. So pretty even. I mean, but you know, who knows? This could be the start of Cooper pulling away now. So, all right, next game, the Seahawks come back to win against the Falcons, 26-24. This was interesting, Scott, because I had some questions on the Twitter takeover today about the Falcons and should I bench Matt Ryan? Should I bench Julio Jones? And I told them, look, those guys are, in Julio's case, he's a stud. You start him every week. But Matt Ryan, I mean, it is a tough matchup, but he's got the hot hand. And it worked out. I mean, he still threw for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. So I think we have to take Matt Ryan seriously as a top fantasy quarterback again.
Yeah. I'm a big Kyle Shanahan fan, and it's just, like, amazing to see what he's done with the Atlanta run game and Matt Ryan as well. I know Ryan struggled last season trying to learn the offense, but it seems like he has it down pat, and he's fantastic, and he's matchup proof. And it's really impressive what Julio did, matched up against Richard Sherman for most of the night, 9 targets, 139 yards and a touchdown. I know Sherman left the field some, or he was whining on the sideline or something. Mike, did you catch the details on that?
Yeah, Pete Carroll was like giving him a bunch of crap about it too. Like almost like told him to sit on the bench and calm down. Like that it was a bad game by Seattle's defense all around. They were missing their centerpiece though. Cam Chancellor is like the glue that holds that defense together. And then Bennett got hurt in the middle of the game too. So like they were severely affected. So it wasn't like the tip top Seattle defense but regardless, you know, we talk about it every single week. The Falcons, what they're doing may not make your fantasy team happy, but they're taking whatever the defense gives them. And they're like, Matt Ryan's playing fantastic. Like it's hard to say that like you could see a better quarterback playing football right now. He outplayed Russell Wilson. It seems like every week there's something new that this Falcons offense is doing. And, you know, Julio Jones is a stud. We know that.
All right, for Seattle, Chris and Michael, sort of mixed results on this. He had 18 carries for 64 yards, not the most efficient, but did punch in 2 touchdowns and also added 3 catches for 19 yards. Scott, I don't think there's any way, you know, Thomas Rawls gets his job back anytime soon, even if he were healthy.
No, I don't think so. So Michael had a bell cow game, even despite leaving the field some with an injury. That's when Collins vultured a touchdown as well. You saw 3 targets, had 18 of the 21 running back carries. You have to be really excited if you're a Christine Michael owner, and I don't see Rawls really eating into too much of his volume when he comes back.
And one more note on this game, Mike. So we had Jimmy Graham lead the team in targets with 9. Second, well, he did it last week too with 8. My question is this going to be to the detriment of someone like Doug Baldwin? Because it seems like, you know, Baldwin and Graham can't coexist, at least from a fantasy standpoint. And if they've, you know, if Graham's going to have a good day, it's going to negatively impact Baldwin. Is that fair to say?
That seems like the theme to this show this week, doesn't it, guys? Like we're talking about slot receivers and how they affect tight ends. And like I said, that's why I said I want to research this, because it's really something that makes a whole lot of sense to look at and see, you know, so going forward, we could understand how to project Doug Baldwin and that. But again, Russell Wilson, I thought that the bye week would have made him look better than he did, but he still looked really gimpy out there, which is not a good sign. He still has that giant brace on his leg. Both of his ankles are heavily taped. Like when running the ball, he just doesn't look like Russell Wilson. I thought the bye week would have helped him get there, but apparently it's going to take some more weeks. This was just a game where I think if Doug Baldwin caught a touchdown, you may have viewed him a little bit different, but considering Russell Wilson, I don't think he threw a single touchdown, did he? I didn't get to see the end of the game, but I don't think he threw a single touchdown in this game. So that it's definitely a little worrisome, but Jimmy Graham is apparently back as a top tier tight end 1.
Yeah, but no, Wilson... Yeah, Wilson had 270 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions, and just 7 yards on the ground on 6 carries.
Yeah, but if there's one thing to take from this game, guys, he didn't really pan out, because I told people that maybe you should give him a shot this week. He didn't pan out. Tyler Lockett, though, if you can go out there in your leagues right now and trade for Tyler Lockett, do that. He might be on your waiver wire for all we know, but he jumped up to 42 of 66 snaps played. They did say he's back to normal, that he's going to start seeing his snaps again. And there's a reason this guy was being drafted in, you know, the 5th, 6th round of your fantasy draft. It may have been a little too high, but at the same time, he's going to end up being a wide receiver 3 on a fantasy team.
All right. Let's round this baby out. So Dallas or Dallas wins over the Packers, 30-16. Dak Prescott, again, 247 and three touchdowns. Did throw an interception. So, Scott, is it time to trade Dak Prescott because he is human or what?
Yeah, so he did break Tom Brady's record. And then I think he threw an interception, or he almost threw an interception the next play, but it was ruled a fumble.
It was a fumble. It was a fumble.
And he threw an interception a few attempts later. Yeah, he's awesome, man. Got to be really excited. I just wish for fantasy Dallas let him run the ball more. I think Romo is going to come back and take over that job. I know Prescott's been fantastic, but you know Romo's the veteran that all the players are attached to. But also, I looked into it, and Ezekiel Elliott's been facing some really stacked fronts, which kind of implies that the opposing defenses aren't leaving too many defensive backs back. They're saying beat us through the air, and they're doing everything they can to stop Elliott. And I think if Romo comes back, that's going to change, and the offense is going to be even more fantastic. Yeah.
See, I believe me, we could spend a whole episode debating this. I think Dak keeps the job. I really do. At least so far, and it's super early, I don't see any fault with his game so far. He's not turning the ball over. They're winning. Now, given the defense is helping out too, meaning, they're obviously staying in games. It's not like they're winning shootouts, but I don't know, man. It would be very, very hard. And I know, like, I live in Dallas, so I have to hear about it. It'd be very hard for the Cowboys to, like, go 5-1, 6-1, and then say, okay, Tony, like, you can come on back. Like, I don't know, man. It just seems like it would be tricky to do that. What do you think, Mike? Chime in here.
Well, even me as a Tony Romo supporter, I've said that if Dak went in and he won in Green Bay, like that you have to continue riding him. Like there, and he's done it without Dez Bryant too. Like Dez Bryant hasn't even been there for the majority of the time. So it's like it's pretty miraculous what he's done on the field. And like I said, I'm one of the biggest Tony Romo supporters you'll find. I'm that guy that says Tony Romo is a top five quarterback right now in the league. Like, I don't know right now with all the injuries that have taken place, but the real story of this game though is Aaron Rodgers. You know, Scott and I had our show this morning, and you know, the question was, Mike, what do you know? We're 5 weeks into the NFL. What do you know right now? And I said that Aaron Rodgers is not a top five fantasy quarterback. And I think it's really weird to say that out loud, but Aaron Rodgers, there is something really, really wrong with him. I actually just went through it while we were talking. And, you know, PFF, on every single week, they grade players, you know, play by play, and it goes through. Going through from 2008 up until 2015, Aaron Rodgers had no more than one, maybe two games that were graded negatively, like a red negative. Last year, he had three such games, which we know Aaron Rodgers wasn't great last year. This year, he's already got two of them. Like, he was graded the worst quarterback in the league today, and he was playing at home. That's, like, the bigger concern. Like, Aaron Rodgers at home, he was always a guy that you could rely on, but now he's a guy that literally you don't even – and I don't want to say it out loud, but I'm going to – you don't even know if you could start him confidently anymore. Like, if he's in a tough matchup, if he's playing, like, against, like, a Minnesota, there's – Aaron Rodgers is not a must-start quarterback right now, and that's – the oddest thing I think I've said on any podcast this year.
Well, and he played a Dallas defense that, quite honestly, not exactly great against fantasy quarterbacks. I mean, they were giving up the 10th most points to fantasy quarterbacks, so it wasn't like he was facing a cupcake, and he still struggled. You know?
No, the one interception he threw, it was like one of the worst throws I've ever seen him make. He missed Randall Cobb, was wide open. There was nobody within 5 yards of Randall Cobb in the end zone. He missed him. It was on like a 20-yard pass, and that's just something that Aaron Rodgers doesn't do. So it really sucks because I truly felt like Aaron Rodgers is a special talent, like a generational talent, like someone who I could tell my kids, say, I grew, going through football, I got to see Aaron Rodgers play. Right now, he just looks awful, and I don't know what's wrong.
I mean, you saw him play during that 3 or 4 year stretch, right?
Oh, I did. I did. And it was the best quarterback play I've ever seen. So,
yeah. It's just disappointing. I don't know. Eddie Lacy continues to not get carries. So you can't really trust that at this point either. No. Ty Montgomery, for some reason, had 10 catches for 98 yards. Scott, this is a fluke, right? That's a fluke.
Maybe. Montgomery was kind of going off before that injury he suffered to his ankle last season. I mean, I like him more than Devonta Adams going forward. Do I like him more than Cobb or Nelson? No.
Adams got hurt in this game. That's why Montgomery saw a lot of work. Adams, almost positive it was a concussion. Like, he was laying on the football, not moving for a little while. So that's why Montgomery saw a lot of playing time.
Why do you have to ruin everything, Mike?
I know.
Because I'm a downer. I'm a Devonta Adams truther. That needs to work through. Needs to work through.
You're literally
issues.
The only one.
No, I'm not really a truther. I'm not a truther, but I just don't think he's as bad as everybody made him out to be.
You are literally the only one left, Mike. Good for you. You're on an island with that. So good luck. Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, that will do it for this weird week six. He's Mike Tagliere, and for Scott Barrett, I'm Michael Moore, and we'll see you next time on the Fantasy Slam.